talking now about investing for your future, your family's future. Are you into that? You know, most Americans are nowhere near saving and investing enough. They're not starting early enough once they get out of college. I guess in many cases with debt as it is these days, they just can't. And I know the market's high. And what? You're just waiting to wade into it until there's a big correction? Is that smart thinking? Let's talk with Joe Lopresti, Senior Portfolio Manager and President of Arlington Capital Management, where he and his team practice what they call a proactive investing strategy. They have offices around Chicagoland, around the country. Joe, if you'd like to talk to him and have a question about investing, you know our number, 312-981-7200. You can call us or leave us a text at that same very number. So is that, Joe, timing the market, thinking, you know, it's overvalued, I'll just wait for the big drop and then I'll wait in?
Well, do you have a sense that a lot of people are doing that right now, Bill? Is that
I don't, but I do have a sense that a lot of people think that, who are maybe not familiar with market dynamics, and they just say, why would I get in now? I keep hearing about all-time highs. It seems ridiculous to buy in now.
Yeah. Well, I certainly think there's more risk buying in now than there was a couple of years ago. And, you know, that's what investors, you know, stocks are the one thing that investors tend to feel better buying, you know, when they're higher, for whatever reason. A couple of years ago, nobody wanted to buy because there were a lot of perceived risks out there. You had the European debt crisis. You know, you had the budget, you know, negotiations.
Impasse in Congress.
The impasse in Congress.
And defaulting and all of this. And yet, that is a better time to be buying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When there's a lot of concern, stocks are priced for that, and there's better values. Today, there's less concern, although I think recently we've seen a little concerns drip into the market. The obvious things would be geopolitical concerns with Russia, Ukraine, Gaza, Iraq. And many of those things are legitimate concerns, but only for the short term. In all of our research, we found that geopolitical risks or natural disasters, things that you can't really predict, only have very short-term effects on the market. They don't change the long-term trend that's in place. And the long-term trend is positive. We've talked a lot in the last few months, Bill, about the short-term risks, and we don't really want to lose too much sight for the long-term opportunity is positive. And I would say that investors that are completely on the sidelines at this point are making a mistake.
Now, when you say the long-term prospects look good, what is it that you're looking at that makes you think that? Just that every time a country pulls out of a recovery, that's a good thing?
Well, a couple of things. The first is if we look at a super long-term basis, what we call secular trends, these are 10, 15, 20-year periods. We just came out of a secular bear trend. We went through 13 years from the year 2000 to last year where stocks didn't go anywhere. And then last year we finally hit a new all-time high. So in our work, we believe that we're in the early stages of a new secular bull trend. So this would be another 10 or 15 year period where stocks should generally rise, just like they did in the 80s and 90s. So that's number one. There's still a couple things we'd like to see happen before we make that complete conclusion. The first is we'd like to see the market handle a basic correction and then recover to new highs. So that's, you know, probably coming, and that's why we're a little more tactically, we're a little bit more concerned about short-term risks. The other thing from a long-term basis is that with our indicator set, we built an indicator set that helps us identify the important market cycle that turned positive in early to mid-2012, and those core indicators remain positive. So until they turn negative, which could be, you know, still several years in the future, we expect that this bull cycle has some room left to run. But there are some shorter term concerns that we have, and we've made some tactical adjustment to our client portfolios to, you know, adjust for those concerns.
We've talked about that,
right?
Possibly coming this year, no less. So when you tell clients, I'm sure this is some of the information you talk to clients about. So you tell them about these long term positives, and then the market maybe has a correction or has a drop. Do they sometimes come and you say, what are you talking about? This is bad news. I'm nervous. Because, you know, most of us who are not sophisticated about market dynamics react that way when there are short-term volatility issues.
Correct. You get emotional. Well, our clients are educated on that. They know we expect a short-term drop, and we've sold.
So you tell them that, too.
We've sold a lot of their positions. Yeah. We're holding, you know, only a third right now of our initial positions that we bought a couple years ago when this cycle first started out, because we expect the market to drop, and we expect maybe in the next 2 to 3 months there will be a better opportunity to put that cash back to work.
So let me get your read on the week in the markets that we just had. The Dow goes back to negative earlier in the week. It pulls out. Volumes looking kind of weak. What's your take on the market performance?
Right now, I think we're kind of in that summer doldrums type of thing. There isn't much of a trend in place. We had
That can influence volumes. That just people are on vacation.
Oh, summertime is always low volume. So we had a new high in July, and in the Dow, S&P, the global stock index is something that we track closely. And then we had about a 3-4% correction, and now a bit of a rebound from there. So we're kind of at a crossroads. Is this rebound going to continue in the immediate future, or is there another leg down in the correction that could, go lower into August, September, October type of thing? Our core outlook is probably we're not going to get just a 3-4% correction and then up and away again into the next major upleg of this bull cycle. It's probably going to take a little bit more cleansing of the short-term risk out of the market, get a little bit more fear into the psyche of investors, because a lot of people got in too late. And, the way the market works is it's going to fool the majority of investors. So the people who bought, say, later in the game, last half of last year or the first half of this year, are going to get tested during this correction as to whether they're in for
it's
the long term.
Kind of a euphemism for they're going to go through a little pain.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. It'd be nice if you could predict exactly what the market's going to do. Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Well, you can't predict exactly, but all you could do is put the probabilities in your favor. That's the best you could do as an investor.
Playing the odds.
Right.
That's Joe Lopresti. More conversation with him. And if you'd like to get into the conversation yourself, got a question about investing, for example, just give us a ring at 312-981-7200. We'll take your call or take your text at that very same number. Back to Joe Lopresti. What about, there are all these indicators that come out from the government that you follow that are important that most of us on the lay side don't really understand. We had, retail sales numbers. What did they say? What did that tell you?
Retail sales numbers have been on the weak side. That doesn't surprise us because if you look at retail stock performance, that sector, it's been one of the weakest groups out there. We use an asset class ranking report that breaks all the sectors down, and we track the sectors. And the retail sector has been one of the lowest rated sectors for quite some time now. So it's not a surprise that the consumer seems to be a little stretched at this point. We are getting more jobs, but they're not the best paying jobs, and you're not seeing that median income keep up with the economy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'd read one report. The average earner is earning less than they did 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And that factors directly into retail sales. But isn't consumer spending like critically important? Something like 2/3 of our economy depends on people buying things.
Yes, but let's also keep in mind, coming out of the recession, the consumer discretionary sectors were among the strongest. Autos, home building. Mm. And even a lot of the retail companies did the best during that time. So now we're probably just going through a little bit of a lull in that sector.
How about oil prices? They were up over $100 for a long time, and now it was, I think, Friday closing at $95.31. And I heard that we're just awash in oil now in this country, which should bode well. We're on the verge of becoming one of the top oil producers on the planet.
I think that is when people talk about, when I talked earlier about this long-term positive trend that we could see for the next 5, 10, 15 years, a lot of people say, well, what's going to cause that? There's so much, our country has so much debt, and they see a lot of bad things for the long term. There are some positive, structurally positive things, and the energy sector in our country is right among the top.
Who could have
on
that predicted
list?
That 5 years ago?
Exactly.
I mean, fracking has been dramatic in what it's done for our production.
Yeah, and it's occurred without really a boost from our government. If we get an opportunity to boost that from a government side, it could really develop into a huge industry in our country. Last week, we exported our first unrefined oil tanker out of the U.S. since the 1970s.
Yeah.
So,
isn't that amazing?
Yes.
We are selling now to other countries.
And that could be a huge benefit from a lot of different perspectives. Jobs, Obviously, lower manufacturing costs for our domestic manufacturers, and lower energy costs for our consumers and businesses.
And national security.
And national concern, yes, as well as, you know, security for, you look at, you know, I think a big geopolitical risk right now is Russia-Ukraine. And the obvious disadvantage of the Europeans not being able to, you know, get the Russian energy supplies.
Yeah, they're dependent on the natural gas supplies from
Russia. So that could be a door, you know, a door open for us to provide some of that to Europe.
Yeah, the infrastructure isn't there, though. I mean, for liquefied natural gas terminals and all this other stuff. But yeah,
that's what I'm saying. If we get some government support and get you know, kind of light a fire underneath that in the next
maybe
3 to 4 years,
maybe that's not the
best
analogy if we're talking to natural gas. But
yeah. Right.
I was surprised with that Russian so-called humanitarian convoy rolling into Ukraine, with the likelihood that it's, you know, military equipment going in to sort of be a Trojan horse invasion or something, that didn't rattle the markets at all.
Well, there was a pretty good turnaround Friday. You know, we were up maybe 60 points. All of a sudden, we were down 130 points. We saw the VIX index spike up big time intraday. It did settle down by the end of the day. But, geopolitical risks are not long-term. They're not lasting effects on the stock market. It's the economic cycle and the monetary cycle that really is the, you know, the important trends for the stock market.
There is a piling on tendency, though, too, occasionally, where one thing is just the trigger, and it can lead to something long term. But you're looking at the fundamentals of our economy, and if they're all generally healthy, it would take a real unexpected turn to hobble them and give us a long-term negative pattern.
Long-term negative pattern is a ways off in our view. It's going to take probably the Fed to actually move to restrictive policies. We think that they're many years away from that. The economy, they're still pumping money into the system. We still have zero interest rates. So there's probably at least a couple of years away from them raising rates too high to be restrictive for the economy.
Yeah.
On a short-term basis, though, what tends to cause these corrections is just supply and demand relationship. We've had a lot of money move into the market, so that demand's exhausted. So there's less ability for more money to come in.
To keep bidding it up, yeah.
Yeah, so then when you have things like Russia, Ukraine, you get a little bit of selling, and since there isn't as much demand there, that could tilt the stock market down on a short-term basis. But, you know, people just want to blame something. It's really just supply and demand relationships that cause these trends to develop.
Influenced by fear and greed.
Yes.
312, I know you don't typically talk about stocks, but I thought maybe this one, because of it ties into the economy in general. Mm-hmm. This person owns Jones Lang LaSalle. How does that stock look for the future? Now, I ask that because the health of buildings, and that's a real estate management investment company.
Right.
If occupancy rates are going up, if the rental prices are increasing, that is a key indicator about something in our economy.
Yes. Now, I'm not particularly familiar with that particular stock, but I can speak to the commercial real estate industry. Obviously, a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, it would have been a much better time to buy a stock like that when the real estate industry was down on its knees. Today, I see the commercial real estate industry is very fragmented. You have, we have offices in Houston, for example. There's a construction boom going on in Houston. We have offices in the South Bay, San Francisco. There's another very vibrant economy there. So some markets in this country have very strong commercial real estate markets. Others have a little bit softer commercial real estate market. So I think it's just a very fragmented industry right now.
And Chicago's looking good. I'd heard that occupancy rates are pretty high here right now. We don't see the construction cranes on every other block like we did.
That's why occupancy rates are good, right? Yeah. But in places like Houston, not only are occupancy rates good, they're building more supplies coming online, and they're still good. So, you know, certain economies are a little bit stronger than others.
Commercial construction, that's so dicey. You got to make commitments early on what conditions are, hoping that they sustain.
Right.
And so often, like that Clark and Wacker building that was 20 stories and it just was abandoned.
Yeah, overbuilding underbuilding, and that causes the booms and busts in commercial real estate.
That's Joe Lopresti, Arlington Capital Management, whose website is
arlington-capital.com.
And that's capital with an A, I always say. Joe, we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Bill.